Chapter 5. Monday. Braxton Hicks. The Toast Marketing Board is a wholly owned subsidiary of Goliath Foodstuffs, Inc., and was an attempt by the corporation to raise sales in its jam, butter, toaster, and bread divisions by promoting the consumption of toast. One of Goliath's most resounding successes, the worldwide consumption has risen by almost 3,200%. Partially in response to an aggressive advertising campaign and numerous celebrity endorsements. Fiona Pipette, A Brief History of Toast. I returned my visitor's pass, then walked the short distance to the Brunel Centre and the nearest Yo Toast outlet. Braxton hadn't yet arrived, so I took a seat at the counter and ordered a mocha and a marmalade on white, from a very intense waitress who had clearly been thoroughly indoctrinated by the hyper-efficient Yo Toast training.
"Butter or margarine?" she demanded.
"Butter.
Thin or thick-cut?"
"Thick.
Orange or lime?"
"Orange."
"Right," she said, and hurried off.
I sat for a moment in silence, contemplating the morning's events. I wanted the SO27 headship badly. It wasn't for the prestige, and it certainly wasn't for the cash, and it probably wasn't totally because I didn't want Phoebe Smalls to get it. Landon had suggested that it was so I would have something to positively define myself, and although family was great and good and wonderful, I needed something more. He was probably right. For many years, jurisfiction had been life's marker, but since I'd discovered that due to my injuries I could no longer make the transfictional jump, my career in the book world was, at least temporarily, curtailed. Landon had suggested some sort of retirement, but I wasn't ready for that. Pruning and gardening and stamp collecting and taking dodos for long rambling walks weren't really my thing. Dealing with bad guys, now that was my thing. My toast arrived, and I took a bite. It was excellent. Perfectly toasted. A hint of al dente about the crust, and a tangy blast of marmalade on an aftertaste of melted butter. It wasn't difficult to see why toast had become the faddy buzz food of the noughties, with TV chefs falling over themselves to write entire books dripping with pretentious toast recipes, and a legion of critics who claimed that food chains like Yo Toast were paying their staff too much, and criticized the lack of unsaturated fat and salt on the menu.
"Next?"
I looked up. It was Regional Commander Braxton Hicks, long-serving head of the Spec Ops departments in Wessex, and also on the board of at least 5 other Swindon-based organisations. He had a non-executive post on the City Council, had been involved in the awarding of contracts to build St. Zivilkix's new cathedral, was a director of the Swindon All You Can Eat at Fatso's Drink Not Included Library Service, and held posts at Cheeseaholics Anonymous and the Campaign for Less Ludicrously Dressed Teenagers. I knew him best regarding Spec Ops. He'd been working there years before the service was partially disbanded, and had been my boss during the whole Air Affair gig almost 19 years before. The fact that he had survived so long was a mixture of affability, the ability to delegate, and efficiency, mostly the last. He loved his budgets. It was why he was so much in demand. Despite his penny-pinching ways and often odd ideas, I had grown to like him enormously, and he tended to look upon me as the daughter he wished he'd had, and not the one he did have, who was a bit of a tramp. In fact, Braxton wasn't having much luck with his son, Herbert, either. He was currently in prison for armed robbery.
"Don't get up, old girl," he said, as he sat at the counter next to me. "How's the leg? Smarts a bit, I shouldn't wonder. Once had a spiral fracture of the femur myself. Skydiving for my 70th, courtesy of Mrs. Hicks, who never tires of attempting to cash in on my life insurance policy. Didn't stop me running a half marathon afterward, which was a bit odd, since I never could before."
Despite being now well into his 70s, Braxton had lost none of his vigour. From either his tall and somewhat gangly frame or his moustache, which was still a luxuriant red. "I'm okay, sir. A bit busted up, but I'll get over it. Physio helps enormously." He stared at me for a moment.
"They nearly succeeded, didn't they?"
"Yes, sir."
"Never been the victim of an assassination attempt myself, you know.
never upset enough people.
You upset a lot of people, sir.
Agreed, but usually only Spec Ops agents when in defence of my budget. Now, how does this work? I've never been to a Yo-Toast before.
I explained that you could either have the highly skilled toasty chef make you something special, or just simply choose something as it came around on the conveyor.
Hmm,
he said, helping himself to a couple of slices of white with peanut butter as the belt moved past.
Never thought toast would catch on. Not as a restaurant, anyway. Did you hear that a topless toast bar is about to open in the old town?
Tutors, it's going to be called. My daughter Tuesday is picketing the opening night.
Good for her. How's she getting on with the shield?
Coming along? Okay.
In time for Swindon's scheduled smiting at the end of the week?
We're hoping so, but anti-smite defence shields aren't exactly standard physics. And besides, Tuesday only guaranteed a solution in 8 years and £30 billion. It's been barely 3, and she's only 27% over budget.
Braxton nodded sagely.
May I ask a question, sir?
Of course.
Do you know anything about the plan for evacuation on Friday? It's not like anyone in the City Council seems that troubled.
They are, believe me. With the whole of the financial district and the cathedral up for destruction, they've been hunting about for another plan. The price of cathedrals is simply shocking these days, and insurance is impossible, as you know.
The Act of God clause.
Right. You know Councillor Bunty Fairweather?
Very well.
She's in charge of smite avoidance, as well as fiscal planning, so you should talk to her. I hear whispers of a grand plan to save Swindon from his wrath.
Any idea what? Just in case Tuesday doesn't manage to get the defence shield working?
I'm afraid not. All a bit hush-hush. I can make inquiries, though.
I thanked him for this. From past experience, I knew that a smiting could take out an area half a mile in diameter, right in the middle of the city, easily evacuated. But if that was the case, something would surely be planned by now. Perhaps the council had more confidence in Tuesday than I did.
And your son?
Asked Braxton, who was big on family. We rarely met without comparing our relative fortunes.
Is he coming to terms with his non-career move at SO12?
Slowly. Knowing that you were once going to save the planet 756 times, but now won't do it even once, takes some adjusting. He'll be okay when he discovers a new function for himself.
What about house, car, wife and babies? Not strikingly original, but as functions go, it has the benefit of long tradition.
Perhaps.
My daughter could do with a stable hand on her tiller, said Braxton. High-spirited lass is Imogen. Perhaps we should get them on a date or something. Coffee, please.
He was talking to the waitress.
And let me try a sardine and moon-dried banana on caraway seed, closed with reduced butter and coleslaw and shredded trumpet on the side.
You do know the shredded trumpet is only for decoration, said the waitress.
I'd assumed it was, said Braxton with a smile.
The waitress nodded and departed. So, I said, we all want to know why Spec Ops is being reinstated. Braxton looked at me for some moments.
No one will confirm this, he said at last, but what we think is this. It was an act of supreme folly to disband the Spec Ops divisions, and arguably an even bigger act of folly to reinstate them.
I'm not sure I agree, I replied. It seems rather sensible to me.
Financially speaking, said Braxton, it's insane. It's like building a cathedral, then tearing it down so you can build another just like it. Reinstatement of the service so recently after disbandment, he went on, is not just an act of folly, but a hugely expensive one. And the more wasteful of public funds it can become, the better.
This is linked to the stupidity surplus.
So it seems, said Braxton in a grim tone. It looks like Spec Ops is expected to help make up the shortfall.
The problem was this. Prime Minister Redmond van der Post and the ruling Common Sense Party had been discharging their duties in such a dangerously competent fashion over the past decade that the nation's stupidity, usually discharged on a harmless drip feed of minor bungling, had now risen far beyond the capacity of the nation to dispose of it in a safe and sensible fashion. The stupidity surplus was so high, in fact, that 3 years ago Van der Post had sanctioned the hideously expensive anti-smite shields in order to guard against the damaging, yet unlikely, wrath of an angry god, eager to cleanse mankind of sin. It was hoped that building a chain of anti-smite shields at massive expense would lower the stupidity surplus and bring the country back toward the safer realms of woolly-headed complacency. Unfortunately for Van der Post, and to many people's surprise, the Almighty had decided to reveal himself, and, in a spate of Old Testamentism, not seen for over 2 millennia, began to punish mankind for its many transgressions. Damage to people and property aside, this had the unintended consequence of making the anti-smite shield de facto sensible, a state of affairs that required a new and increasingly expensive outlet for the nation's increasing stupidity surplus. The opposition prevailing wind party, led by Alfredo Traffic Cone, was calling for a needlessly expensive and wholly unnecessary foreign war to mop up the surplus, an act that Van der Post acclaimed as one mind-numbingly idiotic step too far. To appease voters and Parliament, Van der Post was pouring millions into a doomed plan to rust-proof the Menai Bridge by boiling it in wine, then spending an equally large amount in a vain attempt to fill St. Paul's Cathedral with ping-pong balls, on the rather vague premise that it might be fun. While these were indeed dumb, they did not properly address the issue or size of the burgeoning stupidity surplus, so Van der Post must have looked around for an expensive decision to reverse, and decided to reinstate Spec Ops.
"We have a new mission statement," said Braxton. "Before, Spec Ops was meant to help the police deal with situations outside normal duties. Now we have to do the same, but to generally overspend, change our minds about expensive technical upgrades, commission a plan to regionalize Spec Ops with expensive state-of-the-art control rooms that we will never use, and inflate the workforce far beyond the realm of prudent management. And it is from within this new culture of waste and mismanagement that we think Van der Post hopes to achieve his stupidity surplus reduction target."
"Does that sit okay with you?" I asked, knowing that Braxton and his tight budgeting had been part of the fabric here in Swindon for longer than anyone could remember.
"I am simply a servant of the state," he said. "If they want me to save money, I save money. If they want me to waste it, I waste it. But it's not that easy, because to discharge the stupidity surplus most transparently, I have to think up insanely moronic ways of frittering money away. Simply pouring cash into a pit and setting fire to it doesn't work. The SEC would see through that sort of scam right off."
The SEC was the Stupid Events Commission, the government department created to oversee the safe discharge of the stupidity surplus. Some would argue that it was the SEC's good management and unimpeachably honest adherence to sound business practices that had gotten us into this mess, but anyone can attribute blame with the benefit of hindsight. "How's the reinstatement of the service going for you so far?" I asked.
"Not too bad," replied Braxton thoughtfully. "We decided to rebrand Spec Ops at great expense to bring it all up to date. We designed new logos, uniforms, notepaper, and stuff with Spec Ops' new name, Insquidnia."
"I don't like it."
"No, it's a stupid name, and the focus group hated it. So he changed it back to Spec Ops. That small debacle alone wasted almost £3 million of taxpayers' money."
"I can see you're taking the stupidity surplus reduction program with the seriousness it deserves."
"I do my best. Now, how did things go with Dr. Chumley?"
"He gave me a nut 4.
"That's awkward," said Braxton. "The position I had in mind would require a nut 2, but we could probably make an exception."
"Ah," I replied, surprised, yet somewhat relieved that Phoebe Smalls had also overcooked the goose in the insanity department. "Has the entry requirement been changed since Victor was heading up the department?" Braxton looked at me with a frown.
"I don't recall Victor Analogy ever being chief librarian."
I suddenly had an odd feeling. I had assumed that Braxton's interest in me was Spec Ops related, but he was involved in a lot more than just the Special Operations Network. I wasn't up for the SO-27 at all. I cursed my own arrogance and felt seriously stupid for going so far as to offer the deputy's job to Phoebe. "You want me to run the Swindon Library?" I asked, trying not to make my disappointment show.
"Good Lord, no," said Braxton with a laugh. "I want you to be head of the entire Swindon all-you-can-eat-at-Fatso's drink-not-included library service. Annual budget of £156 million, salary is £72,000, plus the most up-to-date Vauxhall KP3 automobile, a dental plan, free lunches and a generous stationery allowance."
I said nothing for a while.
"I know," said Braxton. "Tempting, isn't it? I thought you'd be shocked into silence by the generosity. Just the thing to ease you into a slower pace, eh?"
"I'm not sure I need a slower pace, sir. I was hoping for something more Spec Ops related." My disappointment would not have been hard to divine, and the smile dropped from Braxton's face.
"Oh, Lord,"
he said, covering his mouth with his hand in embarrassment.
"Did I give the impression I wanted you to head up SO-27? I apologize if I did."
I thought for a moment. He hadn't, actually. I had simply assumed it, probably as a result of a little too much delusive hope. "No, sir, it was my error."
"Gosh," he said, as another thought struck him. "You must have worked hard to convince Dr. Chumley to give you a Nut 4 classification. You didn't use the old pregnant with an elephant gambit, did you?"
"Of course not. That would have been ridiculous." We both fell silent for a few moments.
"Listen here," he said. "Can I be honest with you, Thursday?"
"I'm going to say yes when I should probably say no."
"We all slow down, sometimes through age and sometimes through circumstance. Now I'm 76 next June, and I'm out 2 weeks before then. I still have much to offer, but, well, sooner or later, I'm going to make a humongous mistake, the sort that kills people, and I don't want to be here when I do."
He thought for a moment of the impossibility of the last statement.
"You understand what I mean?"
"Yes," I replied, "but I'm only 54.
"But in that time, you've had a lot of mileage. Head of the Wessex Library Service is a cushy number, and this is why I want you in at the top. I'd like you to liaise closely with Divisional Commander Smalls, who will be re-establishing the literary detectives over the next few weeks."
I took a deep breath, and Braxton continued.
"It's time to move on and out, Thursday. Phoebe is a good choice. Qualified, fearless, smart, nuts, and good with stats. I want you two to get along. It'll be better for you, her, and the service. Now, how about it?"
"I'll have to discuss it with Landon."
"I expect nothing less," he said as his order arrived. "By Jove, this looks good."
We ate while Braxton talked at some length about his daughter's latest drunken escapades and how they were a huge worry to Mrs. Hicks. But I wasn't really listening. Somehow, I didn't really think a career of saying shh and stamping return dates was really my thing. I could go freelance at the drop of a hat and join any private detective agency on the planet with a single phone call. But if I did join the Swindon all-you-can-eat-at-Fatso's drink-not-included library service, I was still in a government agency and in the frame, ready to step in when Phoebe fell flat on her small and very perfect nose. Within half an hour, I thanked Braxton for his time and limped out of Yo Toast.